During this residency, I wanted to share with you reflections on these two topics. One is emptiness, and the other is interdependence. And if you start to wonder what the difference is, there actually isn't too much difference. Tonight I was going to begin talking to you about this topic of emptiness. It really is an important aspect of Buddhist practice. Also, it's an important aspect of our Vipassana practice. And I'd like to begin by sharing with you a story. And it's actually the story of how the beginning of Zen coming into China. How Zen entered into China. And I think it's a story that will set the stage for our discussion or our reflections on emptiness, but also will inform our Vipassana practice. So the story goes, there was this fellow, this guy, by the name of Bodhidharma. And he was supposed to be quite a practitioner from India. And he traveled to China. And as he was traveling to China, and maybe I should give you kind of an image of the type of person Bodhidharma was, just so you get a little bit of a sense of that. You could say he was kind of a rough-cut guy. Another way he was referred to was the bearded barbarian. So one way I think of this is, I think Eric Holvig here was here recently. There you go. Kind of that unkept beard that kind of gives that wildness to it. That's Bodhidharma. Probably had some of that kindness that Eric has as well. The other image that always comes to me around Bodhidharma, I don't know if this will fit with kind of that rough cup quality, but in Japan, I don't know if anybody's been to Japan, but they have these Bodhidharma dolls, Daruma dolls. And they have one style, which I just love. It's, how to explain it? You know, the bottom is kind of round and it's weighted at the bottom. It's kind of like those roly-poly toys or those Weeble Wobbles. You know, Weeble Wobbles. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. And so there you have Bodhidharma's face on the doll. And then when you push it over, it comes right back up. And when I think of Bodhidharma, I think of those dolls. Because the stories that you hear about him is this persistence in the practice and this dedication always to come back up again. And really, that's what we're trying to do in our own practice as well, is having this willingness that when we fall down, that we just come back up again. Just that simple as those little Weeble Wobbles. So now you have this image of Bodhidharma being a Weeble Wobble and a rough-cut barbarian. And as Bodhidharma was traveling around China, the emperor invited him to come speak. And it said this is really the beginning of Zen coming into China. And the emperor asked, and the emperor was well-versed, actually, in Buddhism already. Knew a lot about it. And so he asked Bodhidharma, what is the essential teaching? What is the essential teaching of this holy path? And Bodhidharma replied, vast emptiness. Nothing holy about it. As you can tell, it probably wasn't the most congenial beginning. And then the emperor asked Bodhidharma, who is it that stands before me? It's actually interesting, the me that he uses in this question, who is it that stands before me, is the imperial me. Me, I, who am the Son of Heaven. So the emperor might have been a little bit miffed by this answer and not getting it. And we'll explore this. And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. Well, what's the essential teaching of this holy path? Can you hear me? Does it? How's that? Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the essential teaching of this holy path? Vast emptiness, nothing holy. Who is it that stands before me? I don't know. What was Bodhidharma trying to get out here? What was he trying to convey about this path? So let's begin with this. Let's begin to see if we can parse this about and to get an understanding of this. And I'd like to start just with this quality of emptiness. What is this emptiness that he's talking about? And tonight I'd like to speak about it in terms of a practice. This is going to be really important. And some of you who have read some of the material for the study group, you might already have a sense of this, to see that emptiness is a practice. And I want to point out, actually, in some ways it's a practice that you're probably already doing. And I feel like this is a really important place to begin to understand emptiness. It's something that we practice, not something that we have this concept that we finally understand. It's a spiritual practice. And the practice of emptiness, it's essentially about really dismantling the perceived reality or world that you live in. And through that dismantling, which of course can be unsettling, there's also a freeing quality to it, a liberating quality to it. That's the practice of emptiness. It dismantles, and then it liberates. Put in another sense, it's seen that we have these minds, which you might notice, that make some things, that make many things turn out to be more real than they actually are. And it's really problematic. And what we're doing in this practice of emptiness is we're seeing clearly really what's going on, rather than getting lost in these fabrications of the mind that we think are real or we believe to be real. So it's seeing clearly. Do you hear the connection with Vipassana? That's what Vipassana literally means, to see clearly. That's what this practice of emptiness will be about. Let me give an example of this, which some of you, I'm sure, will be able to relate to in terms of your own practice. So let's say you come in here on a Thursday night, and maybe this has happened to some of you even tonight. You sit down with this intention, this willingness to be present, and the next thing you know, there goes your mind. Whoosh! It's wandering. And I want to point out, this doesn't, of course, only happen when we sit. Boy, wouldn't that be great if it only happened when we sat? But it pervades our lives. That's the problem here. And then you notice that there's like this worry or this fear or maybe even anger that arises around some interaction that you had with somebody in the past week. Or there's some anger or fear or worry, concern about an interaction that you're going to have with somebody in the next few days. Or maybe it could be around an event that happened, or an event that you're preparing for. And your mind just is obsessively churning the stories. Maybe it's the stories of what you're going to say to that person. I think I'm going to say this to them, and then they'll probably say this, and then I'm going to say this, and this, and I don't know what they're going to say after that, because then, and then I'll say that if they say that. You ever find your mind doing that? Yeah. Spins out this whole entire world of what has happened and what's going to happen. And I want to point out, all you're doing is just sitting here at the Wat. And yet, you're living in a different world. And I want to point out that this story, to put it simply, the story of I am worried, or I'm angry, or I'm excited, it has a fixed, solid quality to it when we're lost in it. And all the practice of emptiness is seeing that world that's being created and seeing it for what it is, so that we can become free of it. And I want to point out, this is really important, because this is so much of where we live our lives. Have you noticed that? We live our lives lost in stories that actually aren't happening right now. That's a world that is not as real as we think it is. The practice of emptiness begins to reveal that to us. But how does that happen? We're sitting here, we notice, oh, worry has arisen in the mind. Right there, we begin to break through it. It's no longer I'm worried. Worry has arisen. It's something that arises and passes away. Oh, there's tightness here in the stomach. It's tighter and looser. And then there starts to dawn this, basically you can say this realization that that experience is empty. It's empty of the realness that we've imposed upon it. It's just a story. That isn't the real world. Or the metaphor that's commonly used around teachings on emptiness is that it's just a dream. I thought it was real life, but actually that's just a dream. And there, can you hear, just in there, there's a quality of freedom that can be there, of relief. Phew. Just a story. Again, I want to point out, emptiness doesn't mean that the worry doesn't exist, or the person that you're worried about, or the event that you're worried about doesn't exist. It means that it's not as real as your mind makes it out to be. Can you relate to this? Can you see how your mind is making this world again and again that's not so real? And what the problem is believing that it's real. This is the practice of emptiness. We come to see that things are empty in that manner. And it really opens up a space where we can give ourselves over more to the flow of experience rather than some solid concept of that experience. Also want to point out about the practice of emptiness, it's actually not getting rid of the story or the dream. It's seeing it for what it is. And sometimes the story disappears and sometimes it doesn't. But that's not the way to liberation. It's not a liberation through getting rid of. It's a liberation through seeing clearly. Seeing clearly that something's empty. It's not as real as we thought it was. One story. There was a little girl who went home to her mother and said, "Mommy, I'd like you to pretend that you're surrounded by 100 hungry tigers. Mommy, what would you do?" And the mother thought, and she thought, and she thought. She said, "Honey, I don't know what I'd do. What would you do?" And the little girl said, "I'd stop pretending." That's the practice of emptiness. It's amazing the problems we get ourselves into with our pretending. And have you noticed, for those of you who have done some practice or cut through these stories, the kind of space that begins to open up in your life when we do this again and again and again? There can be a bit more spaciousness, a bit more vastness in our lives. Not that the stories don't end up coming up again and again or the dream isn't there, but there's a bit more space around them. And I feel like when Bodhidharma says vast emptiness, he's talking about that spacious quality that can arise. And do you see, with this description of the practice of emptiness, it's not about finding something sacred or holy. Maybe there might be one way of describing it that way. It's not about that. It's about seeing the delusions there and becoming free of them. It's not finding some sacred place. So this is one level of understanding the practice of emptiness. It's cutting through our stories, through these views that we hold, that aren't as real as we make them out to be. I want to share with you some deeper levels of emptiness now. For example, if you were to simply sense your hands right now, feel your hands right now, or a hand, you might notice a whole bunch of different things about it. Like you might notice, if you really pay attention to it right now, you might notice some kind of changing quality to it. You might feel a little bit of vibration or pulsation. Especially over the long term, your hands might be
a hand might be cold or warm right now, and then in 5 or 10 minutes it might be different. Which is different. So your direct experience is very, very different, radically different than the concept hand. Hand is this fixed word that we keep on using, that we keep on applying to these things that are always changing. It's fixed and it's solid. But these things aren't fixed and solid in any way. Another level of the practice is to cut through these kinds of concepts that we apply to our experience that are inaccurate in that sense. So it's coming into contact with our direct experience and seeing that the concepts that we lay over them, they're empty. They're not the real thing. For example, the body that you walked in here with tonight will not be the same body that you walk out of here with. Through the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide, through a digestion that might be going on. Cells are changing. Probably some cells are dying, some cells are generating. Whole different body that you're walking out there with. Yet we use the same word. The way this is problematic is that, again, we live so much in the world of concept and description that that's our experience, is one of description of words, rather than the flow of what's going on right now, the flux, the fluidity of this world. And many times, especially on retreat, people can have these poignant experiences of the body being very fluid and insubstantial. They're really touching what's going on right now. What's required for that is to see the emptiness, to see the emptiness of the concepts that we overlay on top of our experience. Again, it's the practice of emptiness. Just like we do with these bigger stories that we have around people and events, it's these smaller stories or views that we overlay onto experience. And then there's even, again, a kind of spaciousness that opens up when we see that again and again. And I'm not proposing that we get rid of concepts. It's knowing them for what they are, allowing them to be in their proper place in our lives. An even deeper level of emptiness. And this level, actually, I'll spend more time speaking about Sunday night when I talk about interdependence. And this is the level of this belief that there's some kind of fixed, solid self that's behind our experience. This is what we'll really spend some time dismantling and getting a different sense of experience Sunday night. But this is a really important, because when the Buddha spoke about emptiness, especially in the early discourses, it was mostly around this idea of having a fixed self behind experience. And it causes so much suffering. And what I'd like to do, instead of going in depth with it, is to share with you a metaphor or a story that I feel might give you a sense of the freedom that can come when we don't posit that there's some kind of fixed sense of self behind our experience or behind another person's experience. This is from Chuang Tzu. This is the example he gives. He says, if a person is crossing a river and an empty boat collides with their boat, even though this person is bad-tempered, they will not get too angry. It's just an empty boat. But if this person sees a man or a woman in that other boat, that person will shout at that man or woman. Shout again and again and begin cursing. And it's all because they see that there's somebody in that other boat. Yet if the boat were empty, that person wouldn't be shouting. They wouldn't get so angry. If you can empty the boat crossing the river of the world, no one will oppose you. No one will seek harm to you. Such is the perfect person. Their boat is empty. you get this image of how problematic our lives become because there's somebody in that other boat. There's somebody there. That's why I'm getting so angry. There's somebody in that other boat. Or there's somebody in my boat. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't take effort into navigating around the boat that's coming towards us. But it's a whole different view of what's going on. Can you feel a little bit of the relief it would be to walk around in a world where you're not positing that there's somebody in that other boat or somebody in my boat? Because that's another part of it. Somebody just ran into my boat. Emptying the boat of this fixed sense of self. There's something solid behind our experience. And I feel like this is what Bodhidharma was trying to allude to when he said, I don't know. I don't know who's in the boat. And that was really an essential part of the teaching. I don't know. I don't know who's in the boat, and that's why I have a taste of freedom. I feel like that's what he was trying to say. Very simple and direct teaching. One story about what this can lead to. Actually, this is just a story I heard last week. There was a fellow, and he was sharing with me, a practitioner, and he was sharing with me that a colleague had done some work for him, some kind of computer work. I don't know if it was programming or something like that. It might have been programming. And it didn't go so well in terms of getting the work done, his colleague getting the work done. And, of course, his mind was spinning off all kinds of stories about this other person. And this went on for a while, and he said that one day this colleague came into his office, and he was really intent on doing this practice, which was to seeing that it was all just a story that was going on in his head. And he said, just having a moment to see that clearly, that's what was going on in his head, is that it was just a story. It wasn't as real as he was making it. Allowed him to contact his colleague in that moment. His colleague, who that very week had just gone through a significant loss. And he was able to actually really meet, really connect this other person who was going through a difficult time. And of course, his colleague was so relieved to have somebody be there for him, to connect with him. And he realized this wouldn't have been able to happen if he wasn't able to see that the story was just a story. So you can say through the practice of emptiness, he was able to allow compassion and kindness to naturally be there. But he needed to cut through those stories first to really connect with that person that was suffering. This is what it allows us to do, to be here in the world for ourselves and for others. Okay, let's go just a little bit farther. I want to point out that all concepts, any concept that we have about the world, any kind of view about our experience, is fabricated. This is what we begin to realize through the practice of emptiness. So that means all those words and concepts and the teachings that the Buddha taught us are empty. All of it, it's empty. Again, I feel like that's also what Bodhidharma was trying to get at. And for all these teachings, you know, in essence, they're empty. They're not as real as we think them to be. Which is so important, just so we don't get so dogmatic about all this stuff. They're just stories. Important stories, and I'll get to that. The Buddha was really clear. There are stories that we want to take up in order to do this practice. Important stories that can lead us beyond stories, that can lead us to freedom. One of those stories is, for example, that our actions have consequences. But in essence, they're empty. And even there's more subtle stories or concepts that are there. Even the sense of distance, for example. Our sense of distance, that's actually created by your mind. So if you were a moth right now, your experience of this moment would be pretty different. It would be basically based on scent. And all those scent molecules driving you around. A very different experience of distance. To remember, we have these minds, and we only see actually a very small spectrum of the light spectrum. We only hear a small spectrum of sound. And we think that it's the real world. But it's just a dream. It's a dream that's mind created. And I want to point out, the Buddha was not saying anything about the objective world, about the world out there. He wasn't saying if it exists or doesn't exist. He was asking us to become curious about our subjective experience and how we believe it to be the real thing. And asking us to cut through that. Because there could be even deeper levels of freedom and deeper levels of, we could say, metaphorical spaciousness or vastness. So cutting through these stories, these concepts. This is the practice of emptiness, dismantling the world that we live in. So there can be a quality of liberation. I want to speak about the wrong use of emptiness, though, too, because this can be easily misunderstood. And I want to share with you a description that can sound quite like the practice of emptiness or the view of emptiness. I'm sure this will be familiar to some of you, hopefully most of you. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Anybody know who that is? Macbeth, right? So Macbeth says this, and I want to just point out how this could be a view of emptiness. Life's but a walking shadow. It's like a dream. It's a player on the stage that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It's a tale, and it's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Really could pass off for just to put it in context, you might remember a bit about Macbeth. He might have had a little bit of consciousness, but Lady Macbeth maybe convinced him maybe too easily to kill the king. That was the beginning. And then killing a few other people. And at this point in the play is when Lady Macbeth has died, most people think because of suicide. And people are leaving him in droves. So his world is falling apart, and it leaves him with this feeling of how meaningless life is. The death of his wife signifies nothing. His actions signify nothing. The play itself signifies nothing. This is not the emptiness we're going for. And I want to point out a few distinctions here. We need to remember the Buddha taught this teaching in a very specific context, and that was in the context of how our suffering arises, how our uneasiness, how our not okayness arises, and how to get to a place where we're free from that. It's a very specific context. And we're utilizing this tool. Emptiness is actually a tool that we utilize to help the mind become free. It's a practice that dismantles the world that we create so that there's more freedom, more ability to be compassionate and kind and content. So emptiness is not a practice of denial. It's not this practice of, oh, I'm fine because it's all empty. That's not really being with my experience. If there's worry there, I see it for what it is, and then I'm being with it. This, oh, it's empty, that's a thought that I'm imposing upon my experience. So this is important to remember. Emptiness is also a concept. We're not trying to apply that concept, to put that concept over our experience. We're trying to use it as a tool to cut through the reality that we've created. Does that make sense? Or you could say, the idea that life is meaningless is actually just another story. It's just another story. That everything signifies nothing is just another story. We need to cut through that. There's been a lot written about this. The Nagarjuna talked about the emptiness of emptiness. So that we don't yet again just create another concept that we rely upon rather than doing the practice of being present. Really important. So we're not here to come to a Dharma talk and then learn new concepts and then put those into our head. We're here to learn these concepts so we can learn how to do this practice, to learn this tool so that we can become free. It's a different process. To practice. Again, I want to point out stories and narratives are important in our lives. If we remember their place in the whole scheme of the spiritual path. I want to give you one other way of practicing this. First of all, I do want to reiterate what I was mentioning at the beginning of the talk, that seeing that your Vipassana practice is a kind of emptiness practice. Doing what you're doing is sitting down and cutting through and seeing clearly what's going on right now is the practice of emptiness. What do we need to do? All we need to do is stick with that practice. That's actually enough to allow freedom to come into our lives. We don't need to complicate it any more than that. All this will unfold naturally as long as we continue. As long as we're like that Liebel wobble, we're always coming back. We're coming back to the present moment. We're coming back to our spiritual practice. We're coming back to our community. One other way that you can play with practicing this, and again, it's taking up a concept to help cut through some of this stuff. This is something I did on a backpack retreat last summer. It ended up being more of a retreat than anything else. But during especially when we were hiking together, it was me and my wife, we'd be mostly in silence. I would be practicing mindfulness. So I was really practicing being present with my feet touching the ground and walking, the activity of walking, seeing, hearing. Being present with the activity of hiking. Just basic mindfulness practice. But I'd also bring in there this thought. Everything, this is all just a dream. It's just mind created. And what it helped is it helped kind of shake the foundations that I have, these assumptions that I have about the world and how the world is. And it shook it up enough that it would give my mindfulness just a little bit different flavor. And I have to be really honest, I have no idea how this worked. But the feeling that came when I could have the sense of all of this beautiful space, it's just mind created. And continuing to do mindfulness practice, there was actually this quality of intimacy that arose. This quality of intimacy with experience. It was quite striking. You might want to try that. But what I found is that it was a wonderful practice to do while hiking, for example. Not hiking too quickly, but also more of this open awareness quality. To see if that helps shake things up a bit. One quote that I love just around this, which really speaks to a lot of what I've been speaking to tonight. There's a quote that the Tibetan teacher that I practice with loves to repeat this again and again. He says, The Buddha took a dreamlike form in order to teach dreamlike beings a dreamlike path that leads to a dreamlike enlightenment. So it's entering into this dream, seeing the dream, but still entering into the dream and engaging in the dream in a way that leads to awakening. One last point, and this is really important. This is probably the most important thing I feel when speaking about emptiness. And this is, I think the best way to describe this is through a poem. It's a poem by Issa, the haiku poet. We'll wait. I'll give the lead up to the poem. This is a poem that he wrote on the death of his child. This was the fourth child that he lost. So he had lost three children before this fourth child. And he said, just three simple lines. He said, the world of do is just the world of do. And yet, again, the world of do, just to bring some more words, it's just the world of do. It comes and goes. And yet. And yet we still grieve. We still shed tears when there's loss. We're still human. It's important when we learn these teachings and we really get a sense of them. The world of do is just a world of do, and yet we still feel and we're moved by the world that we live in. This is so important. This isn't about losing our humanness. For me, one of the images that comes to mind is I remember, some of you might know this, I don't know if any of these statues have it. Sometimes you see the Buddha touching the earth. And it's the, you know, the story when Mara comes to him and is challenging him about his awakening. And he touches the earth as his witness for his awakening. And for me, what that signifies that for the Buddha's awakening to be complete, he had to touch his earthiness, his humanness. He had to bring that along for it to be a true awakening, a real awakening. And it reminds me, I can't forget my humanness. But in the freedom, we still will grieve, we'll still shed tears, we'll still have difficulty. So again, it's simply the practice of emptiness that I'm trying to introduce you to. This practice of emptiness that cuts through, that dismantles the world that we create, but also bringing this quality of and yet. So may our practice of emptiness together lead to the liberation of all beings. Thank you.